In this episode, we speak with Krishna Depura, the co-founder and CEO of MindTickle, a sales readiness platform that helps fast-growing companies prepare their sales and customer success teams effectively through building seller knowledge, skill sets, and winning behaviors. Created in 2011, MindTickle's goal was to create frameworks and solutions to help influence revenue leaders who want to create high-performance teams. These world-class companies include Johnson & Johnson, Splunk, and Wipro. Before founding MindTickle, Krishna most recently was the Director of Product Management at PubMatic. Additionally, Krishna has worked with leading companies and startups including Microsoft, Tejas Networks, and Infinera. I'm your host, RJ Lumba. We hope you enjoy the show. If you like the episode, click to follow.
RJ Lumba is the Executive Chairman of Market Insight Media and the Managing Partner of GrowthCap. He is the host of Great Entrepreneurs, a podcast for driven entrepreneurs and business owners. Our podcast covers all topics related to the entrepreneurial journey, from ideation to execution to optimization and to reaping the rewards of a well-run business. In the minutes ahead, we'll share with you unique insights and tactics from some of today's most accomplished and inspiring entrepreneurs.
Krishna, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. It's a delight to be with you.
Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity, and it's a pleasure to meet you and be on this podcast.
You know, where I'd like to start is that you've raised quite a bit of money to support MindTickle during its kind of rapid growth phase. Can you tell us about what gave you that instinct to go ahead and pursue having top capital partners and putting a lot of fuel onto the fire, so to speak? When did you see that product market fit?
I think that's a great question. And I mean, as we all know, like, product market fit is the most elusive thing. Like, you know, sometimes you like, you know, it's very hard to feel it, like, you know, start feeling it, like, you know, you see it in the signs. So, but let me give you a brief overview or a background about MindTickle, which will tell you like how and when it happened. So I think MindTickle, we had a very interesting journey. So we actually did not start it in sales productivity space. We started in a little bit around employee engagement and new hire onboarding space. So it was good. We had a good business. We had a lot of people who were coming to us and, you know, taking and onboarding them, you know, new hires. And when we were talking to the CXOs, they liked our company because obviously we were solving an important problem of new hire onboarding. But then the aha moment happened when I met actually a couple of Series C, Series D successful CEOs. And when I met them, then I started realizing like some of these fast-growing companies really liked us, and most of the people they were onboarding were salespeople. And I was trying to understand like what happened here. And then when I talked to them, like most of these people were saying like, hey, can you onboard my salespeople faster? Can you also onboard my channel partners? And then that is where like you started realizing like, hey, this is where the companies have real needs. These companies are trying to grow very fast. And if we can really onboard their salespeople, there's a direct ROI that they can calculate, right? Because the more faster you can get your salespeople, the more effective they can be. So that is where we started. Like, you know, the idea really came to us, like, instead of just general new hire onboarding, how do we start focusing on people who are more customer facing, more revenue oriented? Because every day that they are spending, every time we can make them more productive, it is a direct incremental revenue, you know, impact on the top line of the company. So around 2016 or 2017, this is what, you know, we identified, and then we quickly validated and took this idea now to another 20 fast growing CEOs. Like, we reached out to them, called them, and then like, hey, this is what we are trying to do. What if we can onboard your sales rep faster? And suddenly we started getting those meetings, and you know, you're getting better replies to your emails and you are getting called into the meetings. So that is where we realized that sales productivity is broken, and we started with that idea. And then obviously the board members could also directly relate to it. Like, you know, when the board members, one of the biggest question is like, how are you going to ramp your people? What is your ramp time and all those? So we were able to identify and get the right kind of investors because they could relate to the problem. So this is where we raised our initial rounds. And as we entered the sales productivity space, we realized that a lot of things are broken here. It is not only about ramping your people. It is about coaching them in the right way. It is about giving them the right content. It is giving them the right tools. It is giving them the right support. And then when you look at who has this problem, any company which has field Salesforce or Salesforce, like, right? And pretty much today, like, there are like almost every segment is, it's a very big, large horizontal problem. It's not limited to a particular sector or a particular set of people. And not only limited to salespeople, all kind of salespeople, like whether you're a BDR, whether you're an account manager, whether you're inside sales, and now even whether you're a customer success or account manager. So when we realized this opportunity, then we started building a larger suite. So Mindtickle today is like the most comprehensive platform where we support the sales productivity end to end, like, right? So when we came out with this vision, obviously it's a very, very large problem. Like, how much can we solve, it's up to us. But when we are solving a large problem, you need money, and also you'll get a lot of VCs to support you. So that is why we were able to attract a lot of capital. And we are playing in a market which I think is getting bigger and bigger, because a lot of like sales productivity and, like, you know, technology is initially, like, in the marketing, you see marketing was initially mostly art. Now it has become science, like, right? You measure everything, you do everything. So similarly, sales things are happening, and that's why we were able to attract a lot of capital, and we are deploying it. So sorry, long answer, but hopefully it addressed
some. Yeah, no, I think you bring to light that you can have an initial product market fit, but you then find a better product market fit. It seemed like your initial product was working, but you said, wait a second, we could totally ramp this up if we switch, if we tweak the focus. Was that a gradual kind of transition? Or did you at one point make a hard turn and say, like, okay, we're switching to focus on sales software?
So I think great question. And again, whatever learning or advice, whatever with limited experience I have, is that you rightly said, like, see, I believe that product market fit is a moving target. Like, it is not something like, because both the things, one is your company evolves, your customer evolves, and the market evolves, like, right? For example, 5 years back, AI would have been such a big thing. And today AI is like something normal. Like, so if you don't have AI in your product, then I mean, like, you know, so your product market fit is different. So, but you asked two questions. So one is like, the answer is like, yes, product market fit, you need to constantly evaluate both for your survival and for your growth. Because sometimes if you don't find it right, or if you're not focusing, you might be thrown out of the market. And vice versa, sometimes you find an adjacent opportunity which can really help you grow. And then you have to take the right call. So we have actually taken multiple, so we have continuously evolved even our product market fit. It is still evolving. But what happened was, like, when we made a switch between from generally new hire onboarding to sales onboarding, it was a hard switch. We took our bets and then we went with all our chips in, like, because we thought, like, hey, and we were also at a stage where we were too young and it was okay to, like, to go big or to go home, right? So it was a hard switch because you had limited resources. So you cannot go and do five things. You could do only one thing, like, right? So that was a hard switch. But over a period of time, we have also done product market fit switches, but they are maybe not that different. So they are slight shifts.
Now, I'd like to go back to the point of when you decided to become an entrepreneur. What compelled you to take the leap? Was it the idea of the solution you would create? Or was it that you always wanted to be an entrepreneur and it was really the call to kind of run your own company?
I think for me, it was pretty clear. It was the second one. So I think right when I graduated out of the college, so I think even like my entire career before Mindtickle has been only startups. So I've been part of a lot of really good startups. All of them have done, like, you know, IPO on NASDAQ and all. So I have been very fortunate that I was able to join those companies in early stages. So again, very young, like, but I was able to join this and work with very senior, seasoned entrepreneurs. So I'd lived the life of an entrepreneur and I enjoyed and thrived in it. So I knew that I have to be entrepreneur. And then I realized that for entrepreneurship, actually, again, this is my feeling and thought process, but I personally give market opportunity and team as the biggest thing. Like, if you have got those two things, and then obviously you need to have the fire and drive to, like, you know, be something. You cannot be an entrepreneur. Sometimes it works, but not necessarily always, like, for fame and money. Like, they are an outcome. They are a byproduct. I mean, many times, like, if you work for the right opportunity and right team, because, like, as you saw in our case, the ideas change. Like, you know, you never know. So, but I think if it is the right team and you are playing in the right market, the problem has to be real. So I think those two things are important. And third was obviously your own personality and style. So yes, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I was waiting for the right team and market. For me, the team happened first and the market later on.
What part about being an entrepreneur do you like the most? Like, when you compare your life and what you did as being part of another, you know, company, not necessarily being the entrepreneur, to where you are now being the entrepreneur, what is it that gives you the most enjoyment?
So I think two things. Like, obviously, everybody has different things that drive them. For me, I'm a very people person. I'm a very team-oriented person. I thrive in teams. I actually love working in close teams. And second thing is, I'm a dreamer. Like, you know, you want to see some of your things to come true, like, right? So as an entrepreneur, it's definitely very challenging because it's not easy, but some control on your destiny to try what if. Like, you know, you saw that we tried the new hire onboarding and then we moved into sales and now we are trying to put this entire sales tech. Like, we are actually trying to like quantify how you can correlate the sales productivity of people and activity and make a science out of it. It's a hard problem. Not necessarily will it get solved or not. I don't know. Like, but you're trying. So that excitement of trying something new and doing that. And, you know, so that is one part that drives me. I have freedom to like experiment and not necessarily be bogged down into a particular area. The second part that drives me is like being an entrepreneur, there's like pros and cons, but the ability to work with like a smart team or a team that, like, many teams are good, but a team that you can work with, a culture that you can create. So there are different cultures. No culture is good or bad, but the ability to control what kind of people you hang out with, what kind of environment you create, your values that you can propagate. So those are the few things where I feel like entrepreneurship has a lot of hardships, but those are the things that get you going every single day, and that impact that you can create, the potential outcome, what if drives you, and creating and experimenting with cultures and people and building teams. I think those are the things that drive me.
Do you ever experience doubt?
Doubts? Oh, yes. I think ever. Like, I think every day when you stand in front of a mirror, for an entrepreneur, I think the mirror is the biggest enemy, right? Because you can go and pretend yourself in front of, you know, customers, investors. But obviously, like, I mean, like, when you're working on a lot of things, like, there's a lot of ambiguity, like, you know, so there are always going to be like doubts, like, will this work? Are we doing the right things? Because no amount of data, like, many times, some of the biggest entrepreneurship leaps, I personally feel, happen on a gut call. And now gut can be a combination of a lot of experience that you get, a lot of intuition that you get. I think that is obviously a lot of hard work, data that you collect. But eventually, nobody can tell you, like, this is the right or wrong thing. Like, you can do all the things and it can go wrong. So I think there are always doubts, like, will this product work? Is this strategy going to work? What will happen if the market tanks? What if the competition launches something? So doubts are always there, but that's the whole point. Like, how do you get over them? That's where, like, your team, your confidence, your connection with your customers, your product, you can have as many inputs as possible to overcome those doubts and act on them. So,
yeah, you know, I sometimes think there's this balance between like one's excitement and the doubts and being able to execute on what that exciting dream is. How do you look at that? Meaning sometimes the doubts can cause you to not take enough risk. How do you look at that?
I'll give you an analogy of, in one of our company kickoffs, we had invited a mountaineer. So he's one of the best mountaineer. And I mean, like, when I say mountain, like, that he actually climbs those mountains without any support. He's like, you know, just goes on those Yosemite rocks, just on using his fingers and all those things. So it's a tough thing. And then we were like, oh, this is the most riskiest thing you ever do. And he says, no, I take those risks. But before I do that, I do a lot of calculation. Like, I figure out, I've done my understanding. I figured, like, so he's saying, like, yes, you take the risk. There's an adventure and then there's a thrill. But then there's a madness where you just go and jump and do it. Like, no, you have to work hard. You have to prep for it. You have to know, like, your fingers have the strength. You have figured out a backup mechanism that what if you get stuck? You will never be enough prepared. But having said that, you have done your analysis, you have identified, and you have covered some of the basic risk and coverages. So there, like, in any adventure sport that you do, you always have some backup. Like, then obviously you cannot cover the 100% risk. Even like when, for example, these movie stars, when they do like these difficult stunts. So, I mean, like, there is always risk, but you have planned, you have covered it up. So I think when in the entrepreneurship, I'll say that you do it by taking out some of the risk. You cannot take all the risk, like, but you can talk to 10 customers. You get a sense. You ask them the right question. You can do small MVPs that you can launch. you can do some of those things so that you can take some of the risk away. And then maybe sometimes you can have a small strategy to test out things, like we discussed in the product market fit, before you pour gasoline on it. But I think, yes, you can diffuse some of the risk. Don't be foolhardy and just jump into it. But having said that, like, if you really want a short thing, you'll never be able to do things. Like, there's risk in even taking a flight. There can all things which can always go wrong. Like, that's it.
How would you describe your organization's culture?
Like, you know, team is a very important part. Like, how do you work together as teams? So winning is important, but winning together as a team is important. Like, right. So the culture is more of like we than I. And then the culture that we try to strive is a little bit of thinking beyond the normal boundaries. Like, that is what you have seen, that how do we help our customers today, but how do we help them in the future? So how do you anticipate the needs? How do you use technology or other things to help them empowered? So that is the kind of culture we drive, where it is about the teamwork, the people, and also trying to create solutions which really help our customers, and not for today, but for the future. That is the culture that we are driving.
Excellent. We're coming up on time. I have two final questions, but before that set of final questions, I have a couple more questions, and we could do these in a fairly efficient manner. One is, are entrepreneurs born or made?
For me, I think entrepreneurs are slightly, I'll say that they are born, because there is a certain amount of risk taking, and I mean, there is a thrill. So I personally feel entrepreneurs are born. I'll say most of them are born, but some people, based on a lot of that experiences that they get, eventually they are able to identify an opportunity and they are able to convert their experience into an entrepreneurship. But some of the maverick ones are born. Like, so, and I'll not say like I'm one of those, but you know, they're like, when you see some of the fundamental changes that they've done, they are like, my belief is they are born. Like, they get it, they're like driven by it, and then they make it happen.
What's the best insight you've ever been given, or the best insight you could ever provide to another entrepreneur?
Entrepreneurship is a journey where you need to support yourself with the right people. So I think you are an average of 5 people that you hang out with. So I think this is the best advice that I have received and I have given, because I'll give you an example. Like, we were doing $50,000 deals and I was like very happy, like, you know, because you are like an initial entrepreneur. Then I was fortunate enough to meet and network with some people who are doing $1 million deals. And suddenly, you know, $1 million was the normal. So you start thinking, and initially it was looking like, oh my God, this can never happen. But then when you start imagining and stretching, things happen. So I think this is one thing that I'll say, not only entrepreneurs, you're the average of 5 people that you hang out with. So choose your company wisely.
Excellent. Last two questions. One is, can you tell us about a person who has had a profound influence on you?
Like most of the people, I think for me also, it was my father, because he was a like simple person, but his belief in like hard work and like, you know, like you put in your best effort and then work with the right people and do it with the right intentions. Sometimes the results come and sometimes they don't come, but they make you happy, they make you contented, and they make you satisfied. So I think I've like learned a lot from him, and those value systems help me grounded in good times and bad times. But I think, I'll say it was my father.
Excellent. Last question. Can you tell us about a charity, cause, or other endeavor that you are passionate about?
I'm actually around multiple parts. So one, like, so where I'm working on is a lot of on the women empowerment and support. So we support a lot of organizations around that. The second is where we work a lot on the climate change. So we are working on a lot of things where around water conservation and tree plantation and those things. So these are two things that we actively work on, and some of my personal passions as well. So these are two things that we do.
Excellent. Well, Krishna, I want to thank you again for taking the time to chat with us today. This was a wonderful conversation.
Thank you. And thank you once again for giving me this opportunity. I really appreciate it.